Welcome to New Realities. This is Alan Steinfeld. And if you've been listening to the show, you know this program is about the exploration of consciousness. And I can't think of anything more current, more pointing to the exploration of consciousness than what is happening this weekend in the deserts around Joshua Tree. Me and my guests and a few other people are going to be emceeing the largest UFO gathering probably in the world. Tonight I'll be talking to Robert Perella, co-MC of Contact in the Desert. Welcome, Robert.
Thanks, Alan. Great to be on the show.
Great to be on the show, and I'm excited to be spending the weekend out there at, really, I think, as I was saying before the show, this is not just a gathering or a convention. This is a social movement. Don't you feel that way?
I think so, too. You know, I think we're, what are they, transcending the vast and sweeping changes in consciousness, as they say. And there's such a different school of thought that's coming in now today, the new information that's available, the acceptance that we're sharing not just the material world, but something that beyond that. And so many people are waking up to that. It's amazing, isn't it?
It is. So what Robert and I will be at is called Contact in the Desert. It starts May 29th to June 1st. It's at the Joshua Tree Retreat Center. And I think we'll probably have 2,500 UFO, ET, alien enthusiasts all focused on the same subject. I think it's going to be amazing. Along with the top expert in the field, the top researchers in the field. That's what I'm excited about, and the people who will be showing up. But yes, so let's talk. I mean, I know one thing I want to talk to you about, actually, and what I'm trying to integrate is that last year at the event, we worked the event, and there was much more of a spiritual tone towards the whole idea of this, of UFOs and ETs. Now, a lot of spiritual people I know, friends, they say, what does extraterrestrials have to do with spiritual awakening? And I know there is a connection, but what do you say about that, Robert?
Well, you know, everyone is starting to wake up to the fact that, you know, there's a deception. The social media platforms allow everybody to talk in real time. Since 1996, the planet has really become aligned with itself. Before the internet, we had to rely on just what came in through the television and came in through your newspaper that was thrown on your door. It really wasn't that long ago. And now people are exposed to such a plethora of information that it's almost overwhelming. And with that, they see articles popping up on Facebook and Twitter all day long, and YouTube and everything, and it shows that the word is spreading, that there's something very unusual here, and we haven't put our finger completely on it, but more and more some of the top rated shows like Ancient Aliens and things like that are repeating, you know, and getting renewed contracts year after year with their sponsors, because the sponsors go, wow, you know, the people are just coming out in droves to see these kind of shows, so let's put these on. And so you have all these different types of shows, and even you having your own show, so, you know, people know that there's another presence here, and they're sort of solving slowly but surely the mystery. And, disclosure is probably going to come out in, 30, 40, 50, 60 different ways. I mean, because it's undeniable at this point. Everybody's sort of seeing this from a different vantage and experiencing it. Experiencers are going online and saying, "This, I don't know how to tell you this, but something very unusual happened and came inside my house." All the way up to just Joe Average, who says they saw something outside their farm. And, the momentum is gaining, yeah.
Right, and I think there are more and more sightings. There's definitely more people coming out of the closet, we can even say, about their experiences, because, you know, a gathering like this in Joshua Tree makes it acceptable. You know, lots of times there's no one to talk to about these sorts of really bizarre events until you meet other people. And I think that's part of the big attraction for the Joshua Tree, is that there's a chance for like-minded people to come together. Don't you find that true?
Yeah. Well, you know, you've got Lightning in a Bottle, Burning Man, Coachella, Outside Lands. You have all these festivals that are not just about music, but about a gathering of tribes, you know, sort of almost the new millennia version of what was happening in the 60s. People are just coming from all kinds of life that want to celebrate spirit, celebrate commonality and diversity, and also celebrate, you know, and exchange what they know about the great wisdom, whether it be UFOs, the mystery schools, science exploration, healing modalities, near-death experiences. I mean, the list just goes on and on, doesn't it?
You know? Well, yeah, it does go on and on, but you know, you also deal in the spiritual. You're some of your teachings are about what I just heard you say, other aspects of consciousness. Which areas do you go into?
Well, you know, I've been in behavioral science for a long time now. There was a period where I myself, like a lot of people, just wasn't getting quite what I really wanted out of life. I knew there was more, and I knew that, you know, my own personal journey is earned, the sense of peace of mind, being grounded, being of service. You know, I wake up in the morning, honest to God, Alan, and I have a talk with my own ego, and I say, look, let's not take everybody's inventory all day, shall we? You know, in other words, let's not look at the other guy and see what's wrong with him, or look at the past and say, well, that person hurt me. Or live in the future. I literally sit down and say, are we going to be a vessel for the divine?
Or are we going to be part of the problem? Do you really say that every morning? You say that every morning.
Yeah.
That is a great practice. That is a great reminder.
That and the virtues. I always say, okay, come on, you know, you can do it. I look at myself in the mirror and say, come on, Robert, you can do it. Let's try to get a little closer on tolerance, forgiveness, selflessness, service, unconditional love, compassion, the virtues being practiced each and every day just increases that sense of connectedness to the divine intelligence itself. There's, for years, people were trying to solve some sort of shortcut to the divine itself by, you know, accessing a certain religion, then learning all about it and say, well, this must be the right road. And those people said, no, wait a minute, that's not the road, this is the road. And then they would name their religion. Now we're sort of transcending that and saying, you know what, why don't we just accept that they all have parts and pieces of the absolute, and let's pull out of that what really seems to work for most people. So, you know, We go back to just being patient and kind. You know, there's no better teachers in the world, and I've been with the best, you know, graduated from the Robbins Research Institute and worked with great teachers. And certainly you've been at all the expos, you've met all the big guys. I saw you recently with Deepak Chopra, and these guys are big, big guys in the personal growth business. But, you know, at the end of the day, you know who's really been the most amazing teachers were my hospice patients, because they would tell me, you know, that if they could turn the clock back, this is what they would do different. And my clock is turned back, and I would think about that long and hard, and I'd think, wow. Imagine this. The doctor walks into your room. You're at the end of your life. He says, listen, I need to sit down and talk with you for a second. You have 6 weeks to lift off. Destination? Unknown. Mm-hmm. I'm sorry, I need to tell you this news, but that is what we're looking at here. And the person just stares and thinks, wow, what was my life about? So at the end of what we find out is that we're actually doing our life review. A lot of people wait until the end of life care to start doing their life review. I said, why wait? You know, they always said, you know, when we die and we go to the other side, we'll laugh about this. I said, why wait? Why don't we start laughing about it right now and do it right now? The last thing I'd want to be caught with was being on the other side. And there's the angels standing there with their arms folded and going, now let me get this straight. You waited till all the way till you got to this side to do your life review. Why do you think we sent you there? It's a little fun metaphor.
What was it all about? What was the incarnation all about? Why are we here? What have you figured out?
Well, in looking at the origin of the soul, you know, it's interesting that We find that really we are who we are because we're the result of everything that we've been. So there, at some point, the spirit and the soul itself take a sojourn into what we term as the material world, and because actually we're living on the other side most of the time, and every so often we take a sojourn into the material plane and wear the veils of forgetfulness, and then we don't even. It works kind of like this. You're on the other side, and then you might think metaphorically, and then I could be wrong about this, okay? So your audience can stop me at any time and say, no.
There is no right or wrong. Nobody has the answer here. We're all guessing, I mean. So go ahead, please.
So we have this situation where we decide, okay, you look at the geographical location you're going to come into. You look at the time zone you're going to come into. You look at the family line that you're going to come into, but most importantly, what are the lessons we must learn at this juncture to further the evolution of the spirit? And so when an opportunity comes up to be born in a certain sector, a certain time period, that will further the studies of that particular spirit, it's decided that they will go. And you might say, maybe metaphorically, your committee who you walk with each day. And there is a committee, actually, that walks and checks in on you and sort of listens to your thoughts and your emotional body and all that. That committee might say something like this. Before you go, we need to tell you that you won't remember us and you won't remember this part. When you go to sleep, you will go to the other side. And when you wake up, the game is afoot and you try to make your way back to, why did this all happen? How did I get here? So you might say that they look at you go from the spirit world. Some of you is infused into the baby form. The baby eventually is birthed and come out, and most people watch their own birth. You actually see yourself being born, and you can't communicate with the material plane because the baby form is too small. It hasn't learned identity, language, ownership or identity. So as the baby grows up, more and more of the spirit from you, from the other side, is infusing into that baby. And then the baby becomes, a small toddler, and it learns language. This is my house. This is my parents. These are my things. This is my name. And you learn all that. And then you grow up a little bit more and a little bit more, until you deny everything I just told you, because you're on this side and you won't remember what even happened on the other side because you slowly have been moving into this side. And then somebody will tap you on the shoulder eventually and say, we should be really getting it together here, shouldn't we? Shouldn't we be learning about, various facets of life? And then you go to school and you learn from your peers, and then some grow profoundly and have extraordinary lives where they just master fantastic wisdom. I mean, of the ages. I mean, you've met them. I've met them. And others are still asleep and not sure what they're doing here. So you have this sort of polarity between those that are sleeping and are really not living out spiritual principle and not sure that there even is a so-called mission to live out spiritual principle. And then the others are going, wow, I'm on a mission here. I need to get conscious. I need to get awake because I'm supposed to be, or maybe I should be a way shower. And eventually, like you put out material to people, you teach, share, and join the conversation, and you bring in listeners on your show, and then you have these profound moments. And that's what Alan does, and that's what's beautiful about life,
But don't you think, I mean, it's true, and that's the perennial wisdom and the philosophy that has gotten people aware of the spiritual realm. But I do think there's something else happening in this time on planet Earth. I think there's an acceleration, an ascension, if you want to call it, a quickening of the vibratory fields that are waking more and more people up quickly. Do you get that?
Yeah. More than ever before. I'm a big believer in what's called the nanosecond theory. The nanosecond theory was brought about by different people. Barbara Marciniak was certainly one of them that certainly championed the nanosecond. and Barbara Hanclough. This is what's called a speck in time. If you were to measure the nanosecond, it's actually 1/100th millionth of a second or whatever, but in the span of galactic great time, if you were to break it down in other numbers, it's actually 1 second in 31.7 years. So that's a little tiny dot of an experience where in all of this time. So
what
the three phases
though?
Of the nanosecond have sort of three phases to it, too. And the first phase began with when we were heading towards what's called the galactic center. And this was in really October of 1987 when we were moving what's called through the harmonic convergence. And between 1987 and 1996, there was a fantastic thrust of energy. This is why all the astrologers were going, there's something happening here. There's an awakening here. And depending on which type of astrology you were looking at, they were all sort of agreeing.
That was the time of my awakening. That was the time where I said, wow, this is not about getting stuff or, doing those things that the material world has talked about. There's something else going on. So, yeah, me and a whole generation of other people, there was definitely that awakening there at that time, for sure.
Yeah. And in 1996 to 2007, the planet for the first time could talk to itself all in real time via the internet, actually. And we really have gotten so used to the internet, we've forgotten how that might even affect us all. But from that period, all of a sudden, the world was illumined, and we could see everything at our fingertips, and in any subject matter, in anything from sciences to metaphysics to the esoteric to building to world events, current events, and we could see everything in real time. So all of a sudden, that in itself was able to speed up the consciousness as never before. So we became a different people once the internet was, brought to us. And then from that period into 2012 and beyond is where there's this next phase where we're starting to actually receive information on a galactic level. Some people are now lucid dreaming and are experiencing a connection to the other side as never before, and that's actually speeding up and gaining momentum. So the awakening is some of these people know that they are actually not completely all here and that they actually live partially somewhere else and that they have connection with guides, spirits, and angels, what have you, while the other people still are asleep and they deny anything is happening.
But, we do have a similar history because I remember the harmonic convergence. I met with Jose Arguelles in actually 1986, where he was predicting that August 16th, 17th, 1987, there was going to be a big shift. And I traveled around the country in 1987 from light center communities to light from Woodstock to Sedona to Santa Fe to Mount Shasta, kind of getting a whole survey of what was starting to percolate in that mid-80s. And Jose, of course, said that it was 25 years from 87 to 2012 will be this time of preparation. And in 2012, we will, blast off or enter the new realm. And I think in a way, it has happened. I think 2012 prepared us for this galactic communication or a galactic awareness anyway, where people start to realize, we're not just part of a solar system, we're part of a bigger neighborhood. There's more here. And I think that whole initial awakening of the harmonic convergence was really key in a global awakening. And here we are.
Exciting times. What an exciting time to be alive.
Well, it's exciting time. I'd like to just talk a little bit about Contact, and I also want to hear your song about that you wrote for Contact that you'll be previewing at, like I said, Robert and I will be two of the MCs at the Contact in the Desert event happening this weekend, May 29th to June 1st, Joshua Tree Retreat Center California. Look online, contactinthedesert.com. But yeah, Robert, are you ready for that now? Or do you want to give a little intro?
Contact in the Desert is just going to be amazing. I mean, I wrote a song, you know, I'm a songwriter. I was very fortunate. My whole life has been around music, right? And
I didn't know that about you. I didn't know you were so into music.
Yeah, that's the other side. I have two different audiences. The one says, oh, I didn't know you were an author. What is it that you you do lectures? I said, yes. And they said, oh, what is it that you talk about? And then I'd tell them. And then some of them go, oh, dear. And the other ones go, that's incredible. I have so much to talk about on this subject, because we're talking about spirituality, the esoteric. And the music people, or rather than the author people, go, oh, you're a songwriter, are you? So I didn't know that about you. And so it's just the way it rolled out for me. You know, I'm a really big fan of Paul McCartney. I was very fortunate to travel with him in 2005 and do five of his U.S. tour dates with him. I wasn't on stage or anything. I was in the Adopt a Minefield campaign, raising money for victims of anti-personal landmines. But I've been in music all my life, and we're going to contact in the desert.
Can you ask about Paul? What's Paul like? I mean,
He's probably the most charming, worked-out guy you've ever met. Honest to God, when I shook hands with him, he has a wonderful way of putting you at ease, because he knows it's a very big moment for you. And he's a real charmer, and he's been in the game so long and so worked out. One of the things that really attracted to him was when I was a young boy, and I was 12 years old, and they came back. Do you remember when they went to see Maharishi, you know, the Maharishi Mahesh Yogi?
Yes, yes.
And they went to Rishikesh into the Himalayas. And when they came back, they asked Paul, so what is it that you learned by being in Rishikesh, you know, with this guru who was connecting people to the divine intelligence? And he said, well, you have to sit still or you're never going to know. So I wanted to know what he knew. You know, if I have to sit still, I mean, in other words, the answer was sort of in meditation. You had to sit still or you were never going to know. And that really grabbed me. It was my first introduction really into spirituality. I was only 12 years old, and so I was just loving the whole music scene with the sort of cosmic intelligence and spirituality and freedom of thought. And now you realize, you know, you can have, you know, what was really incredible was during that summer of 67, was there was a, everybody started to realize, well, you could have it all. You know, I mean, it was suddenly we were learning about mudras, mantras, metaphysics, mysticism, cosmic consciousness. And all of a sudden, I was just like, at 12 years old, I was just like, oh, yeah, I got to get in on this.
Wow,
so I've been a songwriter ever since, and we're going to contact in the desert. Wrote a little song, you know, for...
Wait, let me just ask you one more question about Paul McCartney. I mean, actually, I was a bigger John Lennon fan, but Paul, of course, was part of that team, that incredible, destiny of a team that set the mood for not just one generation, but probably three or four generations. Those guys created the backdrop of our reality, in a sense. And
sure.
They are epic. And, I'm just curious that Paul's been, I mean, I remember seeing A Hard Day's Night or seeing them even on the Ed Sullivan Show. He's been in the public eye for over 50 years.
I mean, yeah.
That's like you're saying, being a worked out guy. I'm just wondering what his spiritual orientation was, as far as you can tell, in his development, if you don't mind.
Well, it's interesting. You know, he's open to everything. When you open up and realize, okay, there's no one absolute path, then all of a sudden you're taking your first step into being maybe an open vessel. So he mentions Maharishi still and is very, very fond of that period and everything. And he has read things like Yogananda. He has participated in Catholic churches. He was knighted by the Queen. He's been in the conservative sectors, as well as being very involved with people like David Lynch and the David Lynch Foundation, who's championing meditation. So I think he's he's pretty well just an open vessel to it. He recently made a very big move for John Robbins and Ocean Robbins and the food revolution. He joined the food revolution, and that's quite a wonderful thing for both Ocean and John Robbins. You know,
what did he do for them?
He joined their organization and then filmed an endorsement endorsing the food revolution for people turning towards vegan food. Meatless Mondays is very important. So for people who have not learned to quite give up meat yet, he says take it one day at a time, take it one day a week, try Meatless Mondays. And then he made this wonderful movie with a little vignette for John and Ocean Robbins over there at the Food Revolution to talk about the importance of eating non-GMO and eating raw food.
Well, that is so good. I mean, Someone like that in a way, he doesn't have a private, he lives his life in the public and people watch his every move. And to come out like that, I think is a really great influence on a lot of people. So
sure.
Anyway, getting back to you and your music, would you say you were influenced by the Beatles and Paul McCartney?
Oh, giant, just huge. You know, you're going to pick a hero. Some people want to pick a sports hero. Some people pick something from another field or whatever. But, you know, I would say activism came from John Lennon. And that sparked me into being in relief work and speaking up and then working in different causes. And then certainly Paul. I'm the recipient of the Certificate of Congressional Recognition, which is an award given by Congress when you've been in relief work for a period and done something a little more, you know, exemplary or whatever. And I was raising funds and doing, fundraising and working in UNICEF in 2007. And I was also in the Adopt a Minefield campaign. And that's when I got the phone call, did I want to go and attend a dinner with him in Los Angeles? And I was like, you're kidding, you know? This would be more like 2004. And so then I went down there and I actually, participated in that. And then they said, do you, we need somebody to help us with the awareness of Adopt a Minefield. So there's a kiosk booth. How do you feel like, selling shirts and T-shirts? And I said, you know what? I'm happy to serve. What a wonderful thing to do to raise some money like that. If you want me to sell T-shirts, I will sell T-shirts, and I will be honored. And I would get to see him in sound checks and in the lobby and things like that, And I would, it was just so wonderful to just kind of see him up close. And, then I got to see him really close. I mean, the dinner only had 1,000 people in it at the ballroom, and number of actors like Michael Douglas was next to me and a number of others were behind me, and we just had our elbows on the stage. I watched Paul sing yesterday 5 feet from me.
Wow. He still has a decent voice, does he? I mean, actually, his one of the Emmy performances, it sounded like his voice was gone, but does he still have a decent voice?
Yeah, it comes and goes. He's getting older now. Paul is 73. Mm-hmm. I saw that Emmy performance and I knew he was in trouble. I know as a singer-songwriter, you have some off nights. You're just too busy with radio shows, traveling, and your throat's not there, and the show is.
Yeah.
So you got to go forward. So, but I've seen it in others. Things after that where his voice was back on. So
right.
He takes very good
reputation.
Care of himself.
He's,
and why not? He
has
the dietitian, the cosmetician, the massage therapist. Married to Nancy Chevelle. Beautiful, beautiful woman. So he's doing quite well. They call him Macca for short.
You call him who?
Macca. M-A-C-C-A. It's short for McCartney. They call him Macca for short. The people on the tour called him Dad.
I met James McCartney once.
Oh, nice.
Not a nice guy, but not the singer-songwriter's father was. I guess it must be really hard living in a shadow of someone like that,
Yeah.
But back to you and your music career. You wrote a song for Contact in the Desert.
I did. It's not quite finished, but I hope to finish it before I go on Friday night. it better be finished. So,
all right. Yeah. Do you want to play whatever you got?
I will. I'll play a few things. You know, the funny thing about this particular song is I didn't want to write a song about so-called aliens or gray men. I thought to myself, you know, what would be something a little bit more entertaining? And I was remembering that old film when I was a kid, The Day the Earth Stood Still, and it was Michael Rennie played this tall, handsome stranger who came from another world that came with a message, and he said, you need to save yourselves or you will annihilate yourselves. And he came with a message, and I thought that'd be a little more interesting in a song, is that instead of writing about aliens, because I always get this thing about the aliens, right? Actually, what I feel very strongly, and there's a lot of evidence for, is there are men and women that are coming here who have benefited from greater time and greater knowledge. And I thought, I want to address that issue. So I wrote this song about a tall, handsome stranger, beautiful girl, and contact in the desert. Are you ready to hear it?
I'm ready to hear it. I'm excited. This is
all right. You tell me
the world preview here.
Is the guitar too loud there?
No, this is good. Sounds good.
Sounds good? All right. This is the theme song from Contact in the Desert. There was a tall, handsome stranger who lived far away. But now we gather in the desert to hunt for the strangers all day. There was a beautiful girl named Rita who came from the Milky Way. A dark said she wasn't like you and I. She came from too far away. They might be contact in the desert and save ourselves. And we hold hands together and solve this mystery that way. So far.
Well, that is really sweet. That is a great tune and inspiring. So thank you. Thank you so much for sharing some of that. That is really nice.
Well, it's not often I get radio time for something so new. Well, my music in general. So, Alan, the pleasure is all mine.
I think you did a really great job putting that together. So I'm happy. I'm happy you are open enough to share that. With us, so and I think that's the melody is catchy as well. I mean, I don't know music, but I think that, you know, it's a catchy little tune.
Yeah, little danceable thing, you know, it's a little almost of a reggae beat almost.
It is almost a reggae beat, isn't it? It's I mean, it's sort of what? It's sort of like, it's like, is it folk
or rock?
It's got a minstrel
feel. A lot of minor chords.
Would you call it like a rock and roll beat almost too?
Yeah. And it's got a pop beat. It's a little catchy pop tune, you know. And Contact in the Desert, I'll be doing a number of different kinds of music. And of course, with a much bigger sound system and much more sophisticated system and everything. And so we hope to entertain. And Contact in the Desert, I mean, my gosh, you have Giorgio Tsoukalos coming out, George Nori. You have Eric Van Daniken coming from Switzerland. You have astronaut Story Musgrave. You have Michael Tellinger, Linda Moulton Howe. I mean, John Anthony West, Jim Mars. Oh, my gosh. There are so many, Laura Eisenhower, so many people coming out. It's just kind of staggering.
These are our superstars. These are, you know, like
the Mickey Mantles of our time, right?
Yeah.
These are like the Mick Jaggers and the, you know, every industry has its, you know, heroes and its peak performers. These are the top of the UFO world. I mean,
yeah.
I really
big,
think.
Big people. Lovely people, all of them. Really interesting. Coming from all over.
I mean, Eric Von Daniken, in a sense, is the godfather of this whole movement. Wouldn't you call him that?
Yeah, I would, actually. I mean, when he wrote, you know, Chariots of the Gods now, let's see, Chariots of the Gods, if I remember right, was released in 68. So what does that make that? It makes that, you know, 41 years ago, Chariots of the God was released. Oh,
yeah.
My God. It's almost hard to believe, you know?
Well, that was such a, I mean, what that book did, Chariot of the Gods, was start to awaken people to other possibilities. And a conference like this, where we're, you know, meeting 2,500 people, it's like we're ready for it. We're, you know, that was the spark, and now this is the full on movement. Maybe it's still beginning, though, too. Maybe, you know, we're still in its early stages, and it could I hope it will ignite a planet. I really do.
Yeah,
I think
we're taking baby steps.
Well, do you care to mention, I know you don't have to go through your whole experience, but, you know, you had quite a bit of an encounter in your time that probably changed your life, I would say, right?
Yeah, I was very young, you know. Actually, I'm not one of the best researchers out there, and I'm not one of the biggest names by any means, but I'm probably one of the oldest people in the business. You know, I was at the very first UFO conference in 1978. There never had been one in Northern California, and the first one was actually in May of 1978. And it was as a result of, you know, I had a close encounter on December 27th. In Lake Tahoe, and that's what I've been known for. The short story of it is I was up there doing meditation in a ski retreat. I was only 21 years old.
What year did you say it was?
1977.
Okay.
And I was on this retreat and ski vacation, and everything kind of going normal. And in the middle of the night, I was startled awake by a deafening sound that sounded like a shrill that was just going through the room. And suddenly I bolted awake with what looked like an arcing storm in the room. It looked like flashes of blue lightning and white and purple, green, indigo. All these colors started just flashing everywhere. The whole room became charged, and a deafening sound was very loud, was being happened, and the ceiling, I know this sounds wild, but the ceiling fell away, and down came what looked like three astronauts. You can see actually a photo, strangely enough, at my website at robertperella.com, and that photo was taken by Jeff Grinshaw from Falkville, Alabama in 1973. Somehow he captured one of these. You only see about 10% of what's there, so you're missing the incredible arcing storm and the lightning and everything. But I was stunned when I saw that there was actually somebody who captured a photograph of one of these. But anyway, they looked like 8.5 foot tall silver cosmonauts of some kind. They had visors. I saw no faces. They had antenna on top, which was about as thick as my thumb, about 7 inches tall, glowed bright orange. And as soon as I started to scream, I started to bolt, I was immediately encased in a blue light, and I couldn't move. And all of a sudden, I was frozen, and I was lifted up horizontally, and I was floating above the bed. And in my mind, I was screaming. I had no idea what was happening. It was too much. It's too much to take in. And all of a sudden, the side of the house fell away, and there was a tunnel. And this tunnel was extraordinarily bright light. Looked very much like the tunnel in Contact with Jodie Foster, if you remember that movie when she was
sort of
normal.
I do, yes.
Looks very much like that. And I went through it at what seemed like thousands of miles an hour. And it was terribly painful, like I was on fire. And then suddenly, all of a sudden, I was naked, and I was in this blue bubble encased in this thing, and I was floating in this sphere of some kind, and there was an obelisk, like a glass object in front of me that seemed to, I don't know, it seemed to read me or whatever. There was no one to greet me. There weren't any beings of any kind. And then this, I interfaced with this thing somehow, and then suddenly I flew back through the light in this tunnel, which was again painful. Then I was hovering above my bed in the horizontal position, and then I was lowered on the bed. And with that, the astronauts went up through the ceiling and the side of the house, and the ceiling sealed back up. And I was lying there in a complete, utter state of shock. I had no idea what happened. And I was sunburned all over, and I was soaked in like a honey-like material, like an oil-like material. Eventually, I threw up over the side of the bed. I crawled across the floor, and I pulled myself up on the vanity of the sink in the bathroom, and I realized I was completely covered in this stuff, and I was sunburned. Well, long story short, I locked myself in my apartment for 3 months, and I didn't want to see anything like that ever, ever again.
Wow.
And I got the idea that later on, you know, since the show doesn't have that much time to explain the whole story, but, you know, I got the idea that, you know, maybe this has something to do with some kind of celestial being. I wasn't really ready to call this extraterrestrials for the first 3 months. I didn't know enough about that. I thought this was something, but I wasn't sure what it was. And then I eventually made my way to the first UFO conference, and there was a very young Richard Hoagland. Nobody knew who he was, really, in those days. And there was a young Stanton Friedman, and there was me, who was 21 years old, and I sat down with Dr. J. Allen Hynek, founder of Project Blue Book.
Yes.
And then he was recording me with one of those little cassettes that, you remember, he used to put the cassette in the little recorder and push down the little plastic window, right? And
you
play and record, and those were the good old days. And he said, "Well, tell me what happened." And there was this guy standing next to me, who sat down next to me, and he said, "Well, what else happened?" And I was busy doing this thing with J. Allen Hynek and everything, and this guy sitting on my right side, I finally turned around to see who is this man and everything, and it was William Shatner.
Really? William Shatner?
I'm thinking to myself, well, no, wait a minute here. What are you doing here, you know? I mean, and so you can imagine my amazement and how humorous this whole story turns out, that as I'm driving home, my friend Dan, who went with me that day, said, "Do you realize the first time that you told somebody about this?" And I had told my parents. I told them, you know, I told my parents. It took me 2 months to tell my parents before I said anything. And then I only told one other person, which was a woman named Clarissa Bernhardt, who's in New York, actually not far from you.
Uh-huh.
And so I told J. Allen Hynek and I told William Shatner the story. Told him that I was having a lot of confusion and I was in my apartment and that I had a lot of problems coming out of this experience. And then as I'm driving home with Dan looks at me and says, "Do you realize that the first time that you've told this story by anybody official, that forever you'll be able to say the first time you told your story was to Captain Kirk?"
That's,
you know? And I thought, oh, God, that's never explained a joke on me. You know, because he was Kirk, of course, in Star Trek.
Is that your only sort of contact experience?
No, I've had numerous of different kinds. As a boy, I saw apparitions. You know, I've seen apparitions all my life.
Oh.
You know, I've seen men and women, children, discarnates, sure, in the middle of the night, semi-torso, full-torso apparitions, semi-etheric.
So there's a paranormal. This is what people are confused by. There is a paranormal aspect to the contact experience that, in a way, still has to be worked out what that's about, you know?
Yeah.
It's something else is going on. I think what I've been gathering from my research, it sort of activates another level of human awareness to open us up to show we're more than who we thought we were. So we're in touch with these other realms. And I think we are moving into a whole new possibility as a human race, a whole new awareness. So any other contact experiences from UFOs did you have?
On October 14th, 1989, I did actually have what I would call one of the little gray characters in my house. And he was standing in the doorway as I woke up, and I saw this thing. He was only about 4 feet high, large head, big almond-shaped eyes. And he was pointing something at me that looked like a tube of some kind. And I literally just absolutely just... I mean, paralyzed in fear, you know, to see something like that in, you know, when you're awake, and to see it standing there looking at you is unimaginable, really. And I thought, either I'm going to take what's coming to me with whatever this thing is that he's pointing at me, or I'm going to do something about this. And instinctively, for some reason, I just leapt out of bed as fast as I could, and I heard this tremendous crash. And when I opened my eyes, I'd run full speed into the door, and I'd knocked myself out.
Wow.
I was looking at the floor horizontally.
There is something, though, quite traumatic about meeting these beings. There's something very unnerving. It's not just that they're extraterrestrial. There's something in their field, something in their presence that is, I would say, creepy.
Yeah, there is. I'm not a big fan of those things, Alan. I'm going to this thing like you are this weekend. I don't think we understand the magnitude. Whatever these things are, they're non-emotional characters that don't seem to have an emotional body like us, but also seem to have the incredible intelligence amongst themselves telepathically to design a ship that would transcend the incredible distance it would even take to get here.
Yeah.
You know, so whatever these things are, they're extraordinarily intelligent. But I think they're here in some ways on some sort of science mission project to understand that. I do feel that a lot of us are all coming from the stars anyway. Mm-hmm. You know, it says in the Lost Books of Job, you are descendants of the house of Pleiades and the house of Sirius and the house of Arcturus. And I would think to myself, why would the architect of that writing so long ago, why would he take the time to say that unless it was important somehow? He's telling us something.
Yeah. No, I do think they're here to have some of what we have. In my conversations with Bud Hopkins, he felt that these little grays were here to, even though they have an incredible intellect, can do these amazing scientific feats, they don't have the ability to feel like we can feel, and that is something technology can't get you, and it's something human beings have an abundance of, and they need that from us, and that's
yeah.
Part of why I feel they're here.
I think as we grow, they grow.
Yeah, and I think we're connected in some unseen ways to all of it. So I'm really excited about this weekend. I'm happy you're going to be there. And I think we're going to have a great time.
Yeah.
No,
great.
Thanks. No, I think what you said is true. We don't have the answers. We have more questions. And the researchers that will be at Contact in the Desert, they're very intelligent and seriously minded. I mean, this is a very serious subject that needs this kind of consideration if we're going to really find out what's going on, you know?
Yeah.
In a way, it's a lot more interesting than sitting in a cave and meditating.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah, well, you know, you meet people that have, you know, direct contact. There's experiencers there and... You know, I don't know how many are actually experiencers. You know, most of them are researchers and they're extraordinary authors. You know, I think there's only a few that really, like last year, there was Travis Walton, there was me, and there were two others. And I think we were on the experiencers panel, people whose main story is, you know, that they'd had direct contact. I mean, for me, it's a long time ago. I mean, you know. You have to accept the fact that, you know, that's the story. I told it in 1978, and I'm telling it in the year 2015.
Well, you don't forget
incredible.
Something like that.
You know, but that is the story. I mean, I'd love to say it was something else or whatever, but that's my story. But beyond that, it was really the commitment that I think it was just a stepping stone to all the other sciences, and more than anything else, healing, behavioral science, and learning to become, you know, a more worked out human being, filled with compassion, and that, you know, can practice these things.
Yeah, I mean, what would you say to someone who said to you, you know, that story can't be true, or you probably imagined it? I mean, there's people still saying that. What do you say to those people?
Oh, you know, I thank them, really. You know, it's not for me to convince them. I feel if they don't understand it or they don't believe it, I think that's fine. I would just say, well, just, you know, ponder the possibility. And if for any reason, you know, you have a little shift and you want to contact me, that's my website, and you can contact me, and we'll look at this again, you know? So I'm not offended at all.
I don't know why it's so far outside everyone's belief system. I mean, I hung out with Travis Walton just recently. I showed his movie in New York, Travis, which is the documentary. And, you know, sincere. I mean, he knows. I mean, he was witnessed by six other people, saw him taken aboard, being blasted by a beam, missing for 5 days. I mean...
Yeah,
it's not something some logger in Arizona wanted to make up one day.
No.
I mean,
he's very authentic.
Oh,
I think
totally.
He's just shaken to his foundation by it. You know, it's the real deal.
It's still. I mean, it's just curious, just between me and you, that it's still a phenomena that some people refuse to believe for whatever reason, and I find that amazing.
Well, it's part of our evolution, isn't it? I find it amazing that people are so stuck in a certain ideology that says we have to get rid of those that don't believe as we believe. And, you know, we have the situation in the Middle East with this, you know, ISIS. You know, I find that just to be so out of spiritual principle. Let's put it in a nice way.
Yeah. No, I know.
And the world's very sick, actually, as we know. The world actually, you know, many, many people are actually quite ill. And that's not to say I'm any better, but, you know, in the healing modalities, most people suffer from some sort of trauma, abuse, codependency, narcissism, drug addiction. They've got some kind of inventory there. I haven't met anybody yet.
Drugs.
It's really, truly doesn't have a tragic story. They might be very worked out now, but, you know, sometimes it just took them a tragic story to get to that place, you know. It did for me. I was raised in that house like a lot of people, you know.
Well, I do think, like, a weekend like this, it's not about escaping this, but it's about these tragedies or the things that need to be worked out. But it's creating new possibilities that... I think can lift humanity up. No one's going to save us. They're not coming to save us. We got to save ourselves, but at least we know we're part of something bigger.
Yeah.
That's how I see it.
Yep.
So, and actually there's going to be some great experiences coming there. There's a woman I met in Australia who's coming, who had some incredible contact experience with the swimming pool around her started to effervescent, and she started to see a ship materialize in the field, and she's getting messages all the time. And James Gilliland's out in Southern Washington watching ships go over his house all the time.
Sure.
So we're in a dimensional transition. I really think so. And people are opening their minds and having experiences that, well, you've had them years ago, but more people are having them now.
Yeah.
And
glad we're doing it. We need
it. We're doing it. Anyway, thanks, Robert. Thanks for taking the time here. Yo, tell people you're going to be on Coast to Coast. That's exciting.
Yeah, tomorrow night, midnight, Pacific Standard Time. A little chat with George Norrie, Coast to Coast. Lovely guy. Love him very much.
Well, great George honor. Is going to George is going to be at Contact in the Desert, too.
Yeah, he'll be at the, he's making a personal appearance on Saturday at a luncheon. And then he's also on the panel, I believe, on Sunday.
Yeah.
So he's right there with Giorgio Tsoukalos and David Wilcock and a bunch of other great guys. Yeah, it'll be very exciting.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a great turnout. Anyway, I look forward to seeing you on Thursday, Friday.
Yeah, after tomorrow.
Okay.
Thanks, Alan. Thanks for having me on your show. Many blessings.
What's your website? What's your
website?
What's
is robertperella.com. You can see it all there. We have a brand new video. I think it's not up yet. I think it's on YouTube. It's called Taking Aboard a Spacecraft. And it's going on the website, I think, either tonight or in the morning. So we have a little video we're showing people.
Great.
Okay. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. Many blessings. And like I always say, let's put our capes back on, everybody. We've got a world to save.
Thanks, Robert.
Okay. Bye-bye, Alan.
I'll talk to you. It's Alan Steinfeld for New Realities. That's Robert Perella, who will be emceeing with me at Contact in the Desert at Joshua Tree Retreat Center this weekend coming up, 29th to the 31st of May, and contactinthedesert.com. Thanks for listening tonight. If you want to reach me, Alan Steinfeld, I'm at newrealities.com. Thanks. Good night.